In Catholic liturgical tradition, we are aware, are we not, that whenever there's a big feast of some sort, there's a vigil beforehand. So, what is the vigil for Christmas? Don't say Christmas Eve. What is the vigil for Christmas? Advent, right. And it lasts how long? 4 weeks. Very good. Question two, what is the vigil for Easter? Good. It's Lent. It lasts how long? 40 days, even longer. What's the vigil for Pentecost? It's the Easter season. It's a strange sort of vigil because, as it says in one of the prefaces, we enter into 50 days of unbounded joy. Other vigils, you know, no chocolate, penance, blah, blah, blah. But here, it's exaltation in preparation for the coming of the Spirit. And a kind of heads-up alert is this feast of the Ascension, a key moment as this unfolds. I'd like to do three things this morning. I'd like to take a look at the readings. They're fascinating. Second, I want to pose that question again. Would it have been a good thing if Jesus had not ascended, but stayed local? Think about that. And then third, what are the consequences? So let's do a quick look at the readings. Today we have a very unusual thing. We have the beginning of a book and the end of a book. Our first reading was the beginning of the Acts of the Apostles. The Gospel of Matthew was the end of the Gospel of Matthew. So there is a way in which we're kind of summing it all up. And in that first reading, addressed to Theophilus, Theophilus, Philia, Philadelphia, city of brotherly love, put aside the martyr rate. Philia is the love of Theo, God. So this book is being addressed to all of us, every lover of God, called Theophilus. It says he was taken up into the heavens, and it describes a couple things that I'll just mention them because I think they're really fascinating. It says, I don't want you to depart from Jerusalem. So they do stay, and they're in the upper room, and that's where Pentecost takes place. The disciples say to him, Lord, now this is after he's risen from the dead, all right? He said, Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom of Israel? They're still hunkering off after a political solution. Might even be, Lord, are you going to, can we go after the people that screwed you over? You know, and he says, no, please. You don't know the time or the day. Forget all of that sort of stuff. But you will receive power. And the kind of power you're going to receive is not political. The kind of power you're going to receive is personal. Another way to say it, when you walk the talk and you do it as a community, you have a tremendous impact. And then it goes on and it says a few other things, but the line that I really love here is, suddenly two men dressed in white garments beside them, they said to the men of Galilee, why are you standing here looking at the sky? There's one translation, it's not official, but I like it, the word. Instead of looking at the sky, you know what the word is? Gawking. Why are you standing here gawking? Get with the program. That's the kind of challenge that's there. The gospel, we'll leave the second reading out for a second. It says here, the 11 disciples went to Galilee to the mountain. This is the Gospel of Matthew. The mountain is what? The location where people are closest to God, especially in Matthew. In Luke, you have the sermon on the plain, the level ground. Here in Matthew, you have the sermon on the mount. All right? A little bit later, the transfiguration is on the Mount of Transfiguration. So once again, it's like an alert. We're about to have some type of special revelation from God. And then it says, they worshiped him, but they doubted. You might say, how can you worship and doubt? Well, look in the mirror. We do it all the time. We do it all the time. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I really want to believe in the resurrection, but I don't feel like it today. Lord, I'm going to forgive my enemies, but I hate the sucker. We have this kind of ambivalence that goes on all the time. And what he does then is he gives them power. He says, I want you to go to all nations. Now remember, he was speaking primarily at this point to Jews. There was the elect, not all the nations. So all of a sudden you have this push to the universal. If someone asks you, do you think that God wants the whole world to be Christian? Today we live in a great respect for pluralism and inclusivity, and so my answer is yes. Yes, not forced, not coerced, not pushed on people, but drawn by a witness of joy. Who would not want that shared universally? Secondly, baptizing them. Baptizing. What was the entrance rite for Jews? Circumcision, applied to men. The Christian rite of initiation is for men and women equally. We still have some work to do in that area, but at least in terms of baptism, that's rather clear. And then he says finally, I'm going to send you forth, but I am always with you, even though I will ascend. So those are the readings. I'll come back to one other one. So then the question comes, and I want to ask you this. This is kind of hard to do in your head, but try to imagine what it would be like if Jesus continued to make these regular appearances, broke bread with people, so on and so forth, but never ascended. What would Christian life be like? Would you have utter preoccupation with, I guess, what you might call Jesus sightings? Ooh, he was there, he was here. I love this Pope, but I think Catholics always run the danger of papalatry. They get too tied up with what the Pope does or doesn't do and so on. I asked my students at USC, I said to them, who's the head of the Catholic Church? They say the Pope. I said, no, not the Pope. Jesus is the head of the Catholic Church. And if the Pope gets out of line, the Pope's in trouble. Jesus is really central. If Jesus were here, can you imagine? You might say, well, if Jesus were here, that would be the last word. He would speak and there'd be no debate. Underestimate Holy Family Parish, huh? I mean, is there any evidence that with the presence of Jesus in the New Testament, there weren't debates and arguments? There were plenty of them. Plenty of them for ambition, for positions of position, authority, so on and so forth. One person betrayed him. The Son of God betrayed him. And even after he rose from the dead, you read the Acts of the Apostles, they're still arguing. Is circumcision required? Is it not? Should we go out to the Gentiles? What are we doing here? The Hellenists are complaining. They're not being taken care of. Okay, let's ordain some deacons. They got all kinds of questions. So we should never assume that if somehow Jesus remained present, there wouldn't be any fireworks. They would continue. But I do think that it's better that Jesus ascended. I want to give you one example of why this is the case. I don't know how many of you have at your bedside Thomas Aquinas's Summa Theologicae, just for kind of reading that helps you to doze off. But in the third part of the Summa, please stay with me. At the third part of the Summa, St. Thomas asked the question, should Jesus have ever written anything down? I mean, he didn't have books then, but you could say, should Jesus have written any books? And as Thomas starts, he says, well, some people would argue yes, because if he wrote books, then his teaching would last to the end of time. I mean, it was really good paper or papyrus or whatever. It would last to the end of time. Another one is the old Ten Commandments were carved in stone. Remember the movie, The Ten Commandments? Right there. Carved in stone. So why not the new commandments? Why not carve them in stone, write them down? Or the third one, if you wanted the truth to be taught accurately, it couldn't be distorted. If it were written down, it would be much more accurate. And then Thomas says, no, it's better that Jesus did not write any. And he says, now why? He gives three reasons. One, he says, the more excellent the teacher, the less they write. Forget this about universities, put that aside. The more excellent the teacher, the less they write, because they write on the heart of their students. They don't write books, they write on the heart of their students, like Socrates did. Socrates wrote nothing. We learn about him from his successor. Second reason, the excellence of what he was to teach, there's no way you could adequately capture it in words. So, I mean, it would be an illusion to think we're going to write these books and that'll take care of it. Even great books, they move the heart, but nothing moves the heart more than a person. And then the third reason he gives, if books were passed on, and here's the key, and you see some of those people, they stand on corners, haven't you met them? They hand out the Bible and so on. I always tell them, I got 20. If it was just a matter of handing out the book, what's the cost to you and to me? So he goes back and he says at the end, he says, Christ is the head, we are the body. He has the body write books and witness. Second, he says, there's a new law, and it's written in the heart of people, not just on stone. And then finally, he says, anyone, this is so cute, Thomas, anyone unwilling to believe what the disciples wrote would also have refused to believe what Christ himself had written. Let me go back to that basic point. The basic point is, Jesus ascending, empowering us with the Spirit, is so that we will witness. We are the church. This is the most important gathering in this space right now in the world. Don't think that it's all happening over there in Rome or something like that. We are the church. We embody the faith. Pope Paul VI said it beautifully. He says, we need witnesses more than teachers, but above all, we need teachers who are witnesses. Each one of us is called to be a witness. Each one of us has the responsibility to be Christ for others. And guess what? We don't do it alone. I will be with you to the end of time. We will soon celebrate Pentecost, the outpouring of the Spirit. Believe it. Believe that the Spirit is present to us. It's just like anything. You work out, you discover you have muscles you didn't know you had. You start witnessing, you discover that there's power within you that you didn't know you had. Move outside the comfort zone, take a risk, you'll never be bored, but your faith will be alive. That's a great grace. Amen.